And on this day in 1969, Fred Hampton was murdered by the Chicago police and by the FBI. We have with us Paul Coates, who is the founder of Black Classic Press, and back in the late 60s was also chairman of the Black Panther Party here in Baltimore City, who knew Fred Hampton and was part of the movement at that time. And Paul, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hey, Mark. How you doing?
I'm very well. And folks, yeah, we want you to join us here at 410-319-8888. The phones are working. Our internet seems to be down, so I don't think we can take emails. But if you do write steinershow@gmail.com, I'll check on mine. Oh, we do have either, everything's up. Internet's up. Good. So you can also write us at steinershow@gmail.com. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, and I'll check the Facebook pages, 410-319-8888. I saw the piece, Paul, that you wrote on the Facebook about coming on the program today. And to reflect on Fred Hampton. Take us back to that moment, just as a man who lived through it, to explain to our listeners, especially those who may know the name but don't have a conception of that moment.
Yeah, Mark, let me do two things first, please, just for accuracy in history. I served as defense captain in Baltimore.
I'm sorry. I always do that to you. I do that to all the time. Sorry,
no problem. No problem at all. Defense captain. And at the time that Mark was killed, I actually was a community worker with the chapter here in Baltimore. And the other thing is, I did not know Mark. I did not know Fred personally. Okay, I didn't know Fred. We had communication at the time with the chapter, and I knew a lot of people and got to meet a lot of people in the Chicago chapter, but most of those were after Fred was killed. I knew Fred like I knew George, like I knew Eldridge, and like I knew Huey, and that was through the symbolic messages that they projected through the Panther Party, through the image that they projected, through the examples that they set. And out of those people, Fred Hampton still shines as the brightest of them all, Mark, and still serves as an inspiration not only to me but so many people because his example was bright. They knew who they were killing when they killed Fred. They knew the importance of killing Fred. I was thinking about this morning. You know, they had Huey in jail, and they probably already knew the content of Huey's character. Fred was more pristine. I mean, he was literally of the earth, and he was of the class of people who we articulated for and who we stood for. In Chicago, Fred was already a legend because he had done things that had served people and had served the youth in Chicago. One of the charges when Fred was killed, one of the charges that they had him under was a charge of liberating a ice cream truck and giving children ice cream from the ice cream truck. You know, this was really, really, really an interesting brother, an advocate for the people. They knew who they were killing.
And, you know, one of the things, as I reflect on this day, Fred Hampton's death, and I didn't know him either, but I remember the day very well. I think all of us do who were part of the movement at that point. And I think people don't understand also that this was an orchestrated campaign by J. Edgar Hoover and the Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI, and their COINTELPRO program to destroy the movement in America. I mean, there's a quote that I will not say one word in it, but I think is important to Greg York, who's an FBI agent, said when they attacked the Panther headquarters. His quote was this: "We expected about 20 Panthers to be in the apartment when the police raided the place. Only two of those black ends were killed, Fred Hampton and Mark Clark," so said Special Agent Greg York. I mean, they were out to murder Fred Hampton, and in that period of time, they murdered a lot of people. I think about the Native American leader and poet who helped found the American Indian Movement, John Trudell, whose entire family was burned to death on the reservation by the goon squad with the help of the FBI. I mean, this is something that happened back then. People don't realize, I think, that people who were fighting for a better America were literally being murdered by their own government.
Yeah, and Mark, you know, like so often we get this thing of the supervillain, Diego Hoover. And yes, Diego Hoover was responsible for much of the evil in this country. I think one of the things we have to really look at, particularly during this period of time, that the orchestration of this was COINTELPRO, which included Hoover, but literally wrapped in every intelligence agency in the United States and wrapped in intelligence agencies out of the United States. So we're really talking about, when we talk about the murder of Fred Hampton, we're talking about an effort that was coordinated down from the president's office. I mean, that's how big
right.
this stuff is, Mark. I mean, coordinated down. In that sense, Hoover was a functionary, you know, whose actions were he certainly informed people above him, parallel to him, and below him. He was an actor in the whole thing. But we have to look at the power of not only the United States government, but the international governments of the world focusing in on the Panther Party. And they're concerned because, you know, largely the Panthers were a part of a movement. We're talking about 1969. And, Mark, and you know that 1968, the year that preceded it, is marked in history, really, as one of the most radical and years of turmoil throughout the world, literally. You had liberation movements breaking out all over the place, from Japan, from Germany, from Italy, from France, all over the place. And in large measure, these movements were either inspired by Panthers or they were very much in admiration of Panthers and in contact with Panthers all over the world.
We're talking with Paul Coates, who is, of course, founder of Black Classic Press and a very successful businessman in our community, former defense captain for the Black Panther Party here in Baltimore City, as we reflect on the anniversary of the murders of Mark Clark and Fred Hampton in Chicago at the Panther headquarters at the Panther in Chicago. We're going to listen for just a moment to the voice of Fred Hampton and come right back to our conversation with Paul Coates.
You ain't going to do no revolutionary act. Forget about me. I don't want myself on your mind if you're not going to work for the people. Like we always said, if you actually make a commitment at the age of 20 and you say, I don't want to make that commitment only because of the simple reason that I'm too young to die, I want to live a little bit longer, what you did it already. You have to understand that people have to pay the price of peace. If you dare to struggle, you dare to win. If you dare not to struggle, then goddamn it, you don't deserve to win. Let me say peace to you if you're willing to fight for it. Let me say it in the spirit of liberation. I've been gone for a little while. At least my body's been gone. You ain't got to repeat after me. At least my body's been gone for a little while. But I'm back now, and I believe that I'm back to stay. I believe that I'm going to do my job, and I believe that I was born not to die in a car wreck. I don't believe I'm going to die in a car wreck. I don't believe I'm going to die from slipping on a piece of ice. I don't believe I'm going to die because I got a bad heart. I don't believe I'm going to die because of lung cancer. I believe that I'm going to be able to die in the things that I was born for. I believe that I'm going to be able to die high off the people. I believe that I will be able to die as a revolutionary in the international revolutionary proletarian struggle. And I hope that each one of you will be able to die in the international proletarian revolutionary struggle, even be able to live in it. And I think that struggle is going to come.
That was a short clip of Fred Hampton. We're talking about his murder and assassination today. It happened today in 1969 in Chicago. We're with Paul Coates, founder of Black Classic Press, former defense captain for the Black Panther Party here in Baltimore, Maryland. 410-319-8888 is the number here. You can write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. We'll get to your calls in the short period of time we have left here as we talk with Paul Coates. And a little bit we'll be joined by, for a minute, with Kevin Zeese is going to be joining us to talk about how this stuff is still going on today in terms of splitting movements. And one of the things I was thinking about, Paul, is that there was this man, his name is William O'Neill.
Yes.
And who was really this double agent, this snitch
right.
inside the party. But what he did was incredible because we were on the verge. You can tell the story that when Fred Hampton was organizing, he was the originator of this idea of a rainbow coalition. He was organizing to pull the Blackstone Rangers and thousands of young black men in the city of Chicago, making coalitions with the Young Patriots, Young Appalachians, and Uptown,
right.
And with SDS. He was this master organizer, yeah. And they really did go in to destroy him and destroy that.
Yes, that's correct. You know, when I think about William O'Neill, Mark, what I think about is the class of provocateur and infiltrator that William O'Neill represented, right? He was so successful, Mark, that he became Fred's security chief in Chicago. Mm. And it was William O'Neill, of course, that slipped the sleep-inducing orange juice to Fred, which caused Fred to certainly not be responsive when the agents went in to kill him. There's no justice in the fact that William O'Neill would eventually confess and certainly give up his role in Mark's assassins. There's no justice in that. There's no justice in William O'Neill committing suicide, possibly, or being assassinated in front of a Chicago train years later. There's no justice. You know, his name is known, Mark. What I often think of is all of the traitors, all of the infiltrators that were on the payroll that we don't know, that we just don't know, that weakened and set this movement up across the country. Mark, as you know, Eddie Conway is still in jail today,
right.
Largely as a result of functioning in a chapter that was set up by the National Security Agency. I mean, this man is still doing time, largely as a result of being in this chapter and being set up. One person was killed here, largely because of infiltrators. There were five or six of them involved with the man's killing. You know, so you play that out across the country, Mark, and you've got people in jail across the country. There's the situation, the two brothers who are out in Omaha, who were set up by the police like this in a firebombing, the same way. And we spent decades trying to unearth and trying to get stuff off of top of these folks. Fred was killed in that same program under the same weight of that oppressive force, Mark.
And I've asked Paul for Kevin Zeist to call in, who puts up the resistance.org website and much more in his work as an activist now. And I asked him to join us because I think that one of the things that the whole question of William O'Neill, what he means and people like that mean, is that stuff is still going on.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And we don't really get that. And I just for just a moment, before we go back to Fred Hampton, to talk a little bit more about what he meant and what he should mean for the younger generations. And we'll get to the phones and people are calling in who don't like what the Panthers were doing. We'll hear what they have to say in a moment. But Kevin, talk a bit about now, because there was a piece you put on your website about 1 in 4 of the people who are resisting corporate power in America, and these movements that you work with, may in fact be spies for corporations or the government.
Yeah, it was a shocking statistic. I'm not sure how accurate it is.
But it was enough to make you stand up and think.
Yeah, no, it made me stand up and think too, because our experience in Occupy was infiltration by a variety of sources, and that was the experience across the country. And research that's come out since, so through Freedom of Information Act request, shows there's a real concerted effort to infiltrate and undermine and destroy. And actually, when it happened to us in Freedom Plaza, we researched that a great deal, and we saw that this is the American way. You can go back 100 years and see infiltration as a tactic, division, destruction, character assassination, and actual assassination are all traditional in U.S. Attacks on political movements. When they can't control movements that are threatening the power structure, they get pretty aggressive in doing what they can to combat it. Now, Fred Hampton, we just put up on Popular Resistance, by the way, the movie, The Murder of Fred Hampton, which was done by a friend of mine, Mike Gray, who just died this year. Mike told me about Hampton. He said that what made Hampton so scary to the authorities was he did not compromise. He stood his ground. When you were with him, you could feel this power around him that he was going to tell the truth. He was not going to be compromised by it, and he was going to stand up for what was real. And that was just too much for people. And he was developing a following. They didn't want to see another Malcolm X or another Martin King or another leader develop who could energize people. So they took extreme action. And this was an assassination. Mm-hmm. This was no question about it. And Mike happened to be in town. He was doing a documentary on Hampton. And then he was actually doing a film for a commercial as well. And Hampton got killed. And they got to the scene before the police closed it down. He was able to film the room where Hampton was killed, the house where Hampton was killed, show the bullet holes in his bed. It was just a shocking thing, but it's a reality we have to deal with. Infiltration is there. I think these days they got character assassination so perfected they don't need to do the actual assassinations. They can keep, and they have the media so controlled that the media is not going to cover political leaders who are challenging the system. So they have many more tools now, so I'm not sure they have to actually go the full assassination route as often.
Yeah. But I was thinking, Paul, before we go to get a quick call before we have to move on, about that moment. And again, I think that it is important to wrestle with what's going on at that moment in America, because it's emblematic of things, as Kevin was talking about, that are going on today. I mean, I remember as part of the Poor People's Campaign Living in Resurrection City in 1968 that the Blackstone Rangers were there. They were part of, along with the Young Lords and the Young Patriots from Chicago that I were camped out with. They were the group that would form the security perimeter for the Poor People's Campaign to ensure its safety. That's what they wanted to destroy. They wanted to destroy the ability of these groups, black, white, Latino, poor people from America coming together. They didn't want that to happen.
Yeah, Mark, I think that's correct. I mean, I really think it's correct. Now the other thing that, the other side of that, of course, is that whole thing about the Black Messiah.
Yes,
rising up.
Right,
and I really think we really really have to focus on that as well, because that is the image that goes back to the enslavement of African people in this country. It's what white America had always, particularly the enslavers, had always feared. And so when J. Edgar Hoover is talking about the rise of this Black Messiah, well, he's talking about the army of black folks that would follow the Messiah. So he's saying the same thing that white folks in Virginia was saying immediately before Nat Turner and after Nat Turner.
Right.
It's the same argument. And I just want to get one more thing in, Mark. Two things, actually. The quick thing is, when Fred was killed, the police, for whatever reason, did not seal off the crime scene. Panthers took over that crime scene, and the community took over that crime scene and conducted tours for the next 3 or 4 days.
That's right. That's right.
So people all throughout the community and the world could literally come in and see that site of the assassination. That's one of the great things that were captured. The other part that I don't want us to get hung up in, the folks like who set Fred up and Mark up for assassination, folks who did that, folks who infiltrated Baltimore, those infiltrators have always been around, and they probably always will be around. I think the great legacy and the lesson that we need to get from what happened after Fred was killed is the fact that people continued to struggle, and people continue to struggle today. And that is as far as I'm concerned, that's what we have to keep in mind. In spite of whatever is thrown at us, in spite of the misinformation, in spite of all the informers, people still have to struggle.
And a closing thought from you, Kevin, on that? I think it's a good note for you to pick up.
I'll quickly say that that's what Hampton would like us to remember, is that struggle continues. And I'll just make only one other point as far as this ratio goes. We did a lot, and Resurrection City was very infiltrated, by the way. There was a lot of infiltration there.
Yep.
Yeah, but the other point is we did a lot of research on infiltration, and actually the figure of 1 out of 6 being infiltrators is not unreasonable. I work with a guy, Peter Kamei, who ran a presidential campaign, and they had break-ins into their offices. They got them in court, the FBI in court. The judge asked the FBI agent in charge, how many agents do you have working in the Peter Kamei campaign? This is in 1976. And the answer was 65. Out of 400 people, 65 were federal agents, and including the co-chair of the campaign. So we have to deal with it. We shouldn't be paranoid about it. I think there's lots of ways to combat that, and there's lots of ways to continue the effort for economic and social justice. being aware of that, but still moving forward without paranoia.
Well, I want to thank the, both of you. But first of all, Paul Coach, thank you for taking all this time with us today. Reflect on Fred Hampton and Mark Clark's assassination on this anniversary of their assassination.
Thank you, Mark, for having the conversation.
I appreciate it very much. I appreciate Kevin Zeis coming at the last minute because I thought it was really important as someone who's deeply involved now in things that are going on to kind of reflect on how that affects us today in the 21st century as well. So thank you both so much.
Thanks a lot, Mark.
We're going to take a very brief break, and I'm sorry if we didn't get to all the callers coming in, but we really wanted to have that say out. You are free to join us here now at 410-319-8888. In a moment, we begin our conversation about what's happening locally, Detroit, homeless funds, and more. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment.